This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we have a very special guest. His name is Dick Wagner. He plays the guitar, he's a songwriter, he does a lot of different things. We're going to go talk to him about his new book, Not Only Women Bleed. Hello.
Hello, David. How are you?
Oh, it's good to have you on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So,
happy to be here.
I feel like I'm talking with greatness because you know a lot of famous people.
Well, I've met a lot of famous people. I can't say that I know anybody, I know quite a few people. I've been in the business a long time, so.
How many songs have you written total? Do you know what the exact total is?
I have no idea. I have several hundred published. As far as songs written, It's way up there. It's probably close to 1,000 songs in my lifetime.
Wow.
That's
pretty impressive.
Had a few hits, and I had a bunch of hits that never got to be hits. They're still sitting on the shelf. But that's, as a songwriter, you just write. If you don't write, you can't be a songwriter. But you have to really practice at it. Have to be doing it all the time, and I do. I'm still writing.
You're still writing songs?
Four or five songs in the last month. Yeah.
Excellent. And who do you write them for? I mean, do you have people in mind?
I write them for me. You can't really follow trends, if you start writing for somebody. By the time you get the song finished and get it to them and they record it, it's, 9 months later. So, you're always behind if you do that. So I just write music for me and hope that something that I write will catch the ear of someone.
Well, you did write for Alice Cooper, though.
I did. If I'm in a project like Alice Cooper or... anybody, really, for that matter. I mean, a project, I write under pressure, but, I can write more or less on the spot, which is a little different than the way I write when I'm at home. I just write songs just because I have an idea and I want to express it, so a little bit different each way.
Now, how is Alice Cooper today?
As far as I know, he's fine. Mm-hmm. I saw him a few months ago. I'm going to see him again in, I think it's the first part of July in Windsor, Canada, because I'm going to be there the same day he is. So I'll see him, and he's on the road so much, and I've been on the road pushing the book and doing book events and playing music at the book events, and so I'm traveling a lot too, and our paths don't really cross that much. We both live in the Phoenix area, but like I said, he's on the road so much of the time that when he gets home, he's pretty much involved in playing golf, number one. And number two, he's very involved in his charities and stuff like that. And so much. So it's very difficult.
That's very cool. I'm glad to hear that he's doing charity work. That's nice.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... I'm sorry.
You gotta give back. You gotta give back at some level.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it makes you feel good. It makes it, everybody wins in situations like that.
Yeah.
You're giving, you're helping, and then you feel good about helping, and the person you're helping is getting help, so everybody wins.
That's right. That's right. It's important.
Right. Reading this book, and I should mention it's from Desert Dreams Books and Music, a new publishing company that you started.
Yeah, it's my company along with Susan Michelson.
Right. Now, how many titles are there so far?
In the publishing company?
Yes.
We have one.
Oh,
book. That's little old me. But, we're looking to maybe expand it into an active kind of publishing company, but that's going to be a little ways away because I got too many other things going on. I could not run it.
Right.
A company that had, let's say, 20 books in it. I couldn't handle that. But... playing still and touring with the band and doing book tours with my book. So, but for the future, you know, maybe I will expand and then we'll start looking for manuscripts, but not now. Not right now.
I like the way you divide the book into different stories. It's interesting. You get to see these. I was just reading the one about Raquel Welch, and that just really made me smile.
Well, you know that was in the New York Post, mm-hmm. page 6.
Yeah.
Aware of that?
No.
They took my story out of my book and put it on page 6, the New York Post. Then it was picked up by just about every. I think just really everybody, AP, UPI, Reuters, all of it. It was all over the world. It was a huge viral story there for a day. You know, these one day long.
Right.
But if you were to Google Dick Wagner and Raquel Welch together, there's 262,000 links.
Right. Now, how many guitars do you own yourself?
Right now, I probably own about 15 guitars.
15? And how many of them do you use?
Well, I use them all in my little studio at home for different things, you know. I don't carry them all with me when I go on the road. I've got like 3 guitars with me on the road.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough. That covers everything I need to do.
So you still go on the road?
I do. In fact, I'm going out in June.
And where will you go?
June and July. I'm going to Detroit June 1st, and actually I'm going to Chicago the day before. I'm doing a speech at a health expo on creativity and wellness. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving my first public speaking speech.
Are you nervous about that?
Not nervous exactly, just kind of hoping I do well.
Right. Well, you're certainly used to being in front of people, so that's not a problem.
No, that's not the problem. The problem is, you know, am I going to come off like a fool or some old guitar player? No, I've got a lot to say, and I'm going to talk a bit about hydrocephalus, which is this condition that I have.
Yeah, I heard about that. Amazing. Just amazing.
Which really, really put me in bad shape, but... That's another viral thing that happened 2 months ago. They picked up, I did an interview with ABC and they put it on the internet and I talked about hydrocephalus and what it had done to me and how I had to come back from it.
Right.
And they put a tag on the top and the title of the article was Rockstar Defeats Dementia. So everybody, of course, clicked on that because that sounds interesting. Who's this rock star that was demented? But that wasn't demented. I had hydrocephalus, and that's totally controllable. And I'm living proof of that because I'm 70 years old. I'm still playing. My arm was paralyzed for like almost 5 years, so I couldn't play. But now I'm back, and it's all because of the hydrocephalus. I mean, they finally diagnosed it, put the shunt in my head. I knew I had holes in my head before, but I finally actually had a real hole in my head. And the shunt drains the spinal fluid out of your brain, so your brain is no longer swollen. And,
then you get
all of your ability to define time when you're playing music. I mean, you gotta have timing when you're playing music.
Right.
And with hydrocephalus, you can't get that. You just can't feel the time. And then I was walking around falling down. I like to say that I'm more famous this year for falling than I ever was for music. So.
Right. What did it feel like when the operation was done and they had drained it? I mean, what did that feel like?
It felt great because I could start to get my timing back and I could start to play again.
It must be frustrating. It must be frustrating when your timing's off and it's so important to you. It's such an important part of your life.
Very incredibly frustrating. Very much.
Do you ever have a day where you don't play guitar?
Yeah, there are days when I don't, but especially when I'm getting close to going out on the road, I like to play every day.
Right.
So I've been playing every day for a while now, and I'm playing really good, so I'm very confident and very happy.
So when you go out to, on these tours, do you play only your songs, or do you play all different kinds of songs?
I play my music, but I also throw in, like, Sweet Jane from Lou Reed. And what else do I do that you cover? I do Stagger Lee and All Along the Watchtower, stuff like that. I throw in some stuff like that. But not too many covers, just a couple like that. And then the rest is all original music. So basically it's music from every era of my past where I've had some kind of success, you know.
Right. You actually wrote a song for Frank Sinatra?
No, he did one of my songs. I mean, that is such a misnomer to me to have Frank Sinatra's name on there, but once it was put on there, you know, and it goes out on the internet, it gets out there forever. It's like you can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
So I don't like to say that I did not play it with Frank Sinatra. He did one of my songs, so.
Oh, he did one of your songs. That's really cool. Well, that's what I'm saying. You did write a song for him, though.
No, it was You and Me, Alice Cooper, and I wrote the song.
Oh, okay.
Big hit for Alice, and Frank Sinatra covered it, so.
Oh, okay. I get what you're saying. But I
didn't actually sit down and work with Frank Sinatra.
Right.
So let's forget that, you know. Otherwise, I'd definitely be part of the Rat Pack, you know.
Well, your songs are featured. It says your songs are featured on more than 200 renowned albums. That's an awful lot of albums. That's amazing. I mean, your accomplishments, I mean, are amazing.
Well, thank you. Well, I've been doing this 50 years.
Wow.
And you got to accomplish something in 50 years, you know. So I've had some success right along, and it's been good because I worked really hard at getting here.
Right, exactly. And a lot of this, I love reading the stories in your books. They're all different kinds of stories. Lots of women you were with and met along the way. And here's one on Roy Orbison. I can't imagine what Roy Orbison was like. He seemed like a very quiet man.
He was quiet. He was a very nice man. And, you know, that's that story where I was in the motel room, and Roy had his acoustic guitar, and he said to me, "Would you like to hear my next record?" I said, "Of course," you know. So he played me Candyman and Crying, two of his biggest hits. And it was a two-sided record. It was a double hit, both sides.
Right.
But I got to hear them on acoustic guitar with Roy singing them in a little motel room in Adrian, Michigan, several months before they were released. So it was kind of a good moment in my life.
Yeah, he had a lot of songs that really, his songs seem to resonate with people, and still today they talk about Roy Orbison every once in a while. You still hear about him. I mean,
his songwriting was so elementally and melodically, I mean, they were romantic songs, and they were very powerful kind of songs, so.
Right.
I mean, he was a great influence on me as far as songwriting goes. I loved the way he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And his voice, of course, is undeniable. So,
what is it like to write a song? I mean, to sit down and write a song. I mean, how long does it take to write one for you?
Well, you know, it really depends. Depends how you approach it. Sometimes you just write a title and you figure out a particular subject or whatever. You come up with the title out of a conversation.
Right.
Sometimes you write the music first. Sometimes you write an entire lyric and adapt music to it. So it works from all different directions, and there are no rules as far as where you start or how long it's going to take. And the song I have called Jerusalem was based on music that I had written, and I tried for years to come up with lyrics. It was beautiful music. And I even sent it out to publishers in Los Angeles to see if they had any lyricists who could come up with something for this music, and no one ever could. Until one day I was watching TV and it was, they were talking about the war in the Middle East and stuff, and that sparked me right there. Creativity kicked in, and I wrote the lyrics for it in about 20 minutes, so. But it had been 10 years since I'd written the music, so it takes 10 years sometimes to finish a song.
Wow.
Or it can happen in 20 minutes. I mean, It just depends.
Well, tell me some of the famous songs that everybody's heard that you've written.
Only Women Bleed.
Yeah, that's a great song.
And that's been recorded by like 30 different artists.
Wow.
So it's kind of a modern classic in its own way.
So every time they record it, you get a royalty.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just go out to the mailbox every once in a while and get a check.
That's nice.
It's very nice.
Well, how long did it take you to write that song?
That's another kind of... In between, I had written the music for it in 1968 when I had a band called The Frost in Detroit.
Right.
But the lyrics was, I just never came up with a good lyric. And when I got together with Alice Cooper in 1975, I happened to play that song on part of a tape with a bunch of songs. And he stopped me and he said, I love that music, but I think the lyrics isn't good enough. And I said, I agree totally. So he told me that he had a title that he'd been wanting to work with, and maybe the title and the music would work together, and they would come up with a new song. So it took us about 20 minutes to get the entire thing finished. But Only Women Bleed is the song that came out of it. So.
Right.
So that took a while because I wrote it in 68, and then in 75 we finished it off.
Right. Well, how did it come about that you wrote for, I mean, you wrote for all these different people, like Air Supply, and how did those, did they approach you about writing a song, or how did that work?
Well, generally, you know, if you write a good song, you demo it, you have some kind of recording of it, so that you can present it to different people. And I actually sent that Just As I Am song for Air Supply over to Clive Davis.
Right.
Hoping to hear from him quickly that it was a hit, but I didn't hear anything from him for 3 years. And then I was speaking to Bob Ezrin one day, and he told me about a song that Clive was insisting that he record with Air Supply. And the band didn't want it because they wanted to write their own songs. And Ezrin said, well, he didn't really like it that much. And I asked him the title, he told me the title, and I said, that's my song, Bob. And he said, well, then I love it. Let's do it.
Right.
So he brought me up to Toronto to play the guitars on it. I put like 7 tracks of guitars on that song for Air Supply. I even sang some of the vocal background, so I'm definitely in that record. And it was a hit, major hit. Fortuitously, VH1 was sponsoring Air Supply's summer tour of the United States that year, which I think is 1985.
Right.
And so they played that song like every 20 minutes. It was like, so it became a big hit and all over the world. So
that's got to be a great feeling.
It's a great feeling. You know, I'm right in the middle of the 1980s and I'm waiting to have another hit somewhere, and then out of the blue, this song that I wrote is suddenly an Air Supply single and getting all kinds of promotion. So I've had some good things happen to me that way. You know, it's hard work. I've worked really hard in my career, but at the same time, you got to have some kind of luck now and then.
Right, exactly. I mean, the list of all the people you've written for is amazing. I mean, it's truly...
Well, that's what I do. You know, I write songs and I play guitar.
How old were you when you wrote your first song?
I guess I was probably... maybe 18.
18 years old.
Yeah.
And you never stopped after that. You're still writing songs today.
Still writing. Like I said, I wrote about 5 songs here in the last two months.
Right. So it's...
I'm always doing it. In fact, I'm working on a song right this minute.
Oh, yeah.
A very irreverent tune. But it's more for comic relief than anything else. And so, but I did write a couple of really beautiful romantic ballad kind of songs a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I enjoy songwriting, so I do it.
Now, you mentioned the song... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you mentioned the song We're an American Band. Did you write that song?
No, I had nothing to do with American Band.
Okay. You mentioned it.
That's Grand Funk. I might have mentioned it in my book. I don't remember why.
Connie, the girl, yeah. Connie, that apparently.
Connie, right? Connie from Shreveport. Yeah, she was in a song that they wrote. I guess American Band, and we all had experiences with Connie, so it was just a deal where
she got around.
She got around. You know, she was a sweet girl, but she was, you know, she got around.
Mm-hmm.
I've known a few women like that who, you know, who get around, but who are really nice people, and, you know, people condemn them, but at the same time, you know, you have the freedom to be who you're going to be, and so I don't have any particular kind of condemnation of people who are very sexually active.
Right.
I was pretty active myself.
Yeah, I can tell.
You know, so like, you know, I was pretty crazy for a while in my life too, so.
You were having fun. You were young and having fun. What can you say?
I was having just a barrel of fun. I mean, it was fantastic, really. I'm out on the road and experiencing all this stuff, and, you know, just a young boy from the Midwest and just really having a good time.
Now, you've been married how many times?
Three
times.
I'm not very good at marriage.
No.
You know, I'm more of a, really actually more of a kind of a loner.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to, you know, to relate to somebody on that intimate level.
Right.
It starts out good, and then it gets the way marriage is, you know, and then you either cope with it or you don't. And, you know, most of the time, my marriage isn't broken down, but that's neither here nor there. I've been in relationships that were like a marriage, but were not married, and those were gone. They also broke down. So, you know, how long can you really hang in there with one woman? It's very difficult.
It takes a lot of work. Marriages take a lot of work. You can't
a
do.
Lot of work.
And you were traveling the country.
Yeah.
A lot. I mean, how many, typically when you were in your heyday, how many times a year were you on tour? I mean, of the 365 days, how many of those days were you on tour?
A couple hundred.
A couple hundred. See, that's a lot of days. You were traveling. You must have gotten tired of traveling.
The traveling part is tiring, but just doing the gigs and playing the music is not tiring, so.
It's the fun part.
Yeah, you give up one for the other. You have to travel in order to do that.
So. Have you ever had stage fright?
When I was young, the first time I went on stage to play a guitar solo, I was so scared I turned my back to the audience to play it. I couldn't look out upon them and play this guitar solo. I had to turn around. So, yeah, I've had stage fright, sure.
Yeah, I guess.
And I don't anymore. I mean, I did when I was very young.
What's the secret to getting over that? Or is it just something you, as you do it more and more, you get more and more used to it?
Well, that's true, what you just said. It's true. But once you get some confidence in yourself, you know, and you're actually a good player and you can actually pull things off, then it gets easier and easier.
Right.
And then if you start talking into the mic and talking to people and getting good response. And once in a while I do these seminars, and, you know, guitar and songwriting seminars where I'm forced to have to speak, you know. And, I get a question and answer thing going, and then it gets really comfortable because you get to see what people are thinking.
Right. Well, you're easy to talk to.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I tried to make my book conversational, you know, so it's...
And you've got a lot...
Like a conversation, yeah.
You see, you have a lot of stories to tell, which is fascinating, and they're funny, and they're definitely different.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, they're all over the place as far as what goes on. With each story, it's something different, you know? We learn something different about... We feel like we're learning more about you with these stories.
Yeah, well, you actually do. I mean, obviously, a lot of the stuff no one's ever known about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I put it out there. I just tried to be as honest as I could. And there are some stories that I did not write. wouldn't, because I don't want to hurt anybody. I also don't want to get in a position where I'm offending anyone.
Right.
Not that I'm trying to make everything whitewashed, but that's not... There are certain things that happened in my life and my career that I'd rather not speak about.
Right.
So I've left some things out, but it's a pretty close to a tell-all kind of book, but it's usually the good part. I tell it all, but I tell about the good part. I don't dwell on the things that have gone bad.
Here's a picture of your sons, Robert and Michael. Well, you got some good-looking sons.
Aren't they great?
Yeah.
Michael died in the car crash.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible. But my son Robert's still going. He's a musician. And he's very successful in Austin, Texas.
It looks like they were very close. Just in this picture, you can see how close they were.
They were very close. Yes, they were.
Now, how old was Michael when he died?
24.
God, that's 24. So young. Sorry to hear that. It's terrible. I can't imagine what that did to you. And that affects you, too. I mean, that affects you greatly.
Oh, tremendously.
I mean, you never get over something like that. I love this.
No, you don't, really.
I love this comparison of you and Richard Wagner. You look so much the same. It's funny.
Yeah, there's definitely some kind of familial, comparison there.
It's weird. It's uncanny. I mean, it's so, you're so similar. Are you sure you're not related in some way?
Well, I think I probably am. I mean, if you just look at the genetics, and then I've had people like Michael came in and guys from the New York Symphony tell me that I have to be a descendant of Wagner because of the way I write music.
Right.
My chord structures and things are very similar to that kind of style. Always majestic songs. So I guess I probably am. There is somebody right now doing a genealogy thing, trying to find out for sure. I don't encourage it because I don't really care. But
you're very honest. You're very honest about things. It's very refreshing.
You know, I really don't care if I'm related to Wagner. I mean, I guess you could call it a selling point. I don't see that it is myself, but. It's interesting to know what your heritage is for anyone.
Right. Oh, there's Susie Quattro. Wow. I'm looking through these. These pictures are just incredible. They're so fascinating. I mean,
I think the pictures, I think we got a really great picture gallery in that book. I'm very proud of it.
And that's the thing. There's a lot of them. It's not like some books you have two or three pages of pictures and you have nothing. But there's so many pictures in here you can go through. And yet, when you're reading the book, you want to see what the person looks like. You're curious. And there are you at in 1944. Now, you were how old in 1944?
Two.
And there you are sitting down, you know?
That's little Dickie Wagner right there.
That's a beautiful picture.
Every time a girl reads this book in front of me or looks through it and comes to that picture, they always go, oh.
Yes, exactly. How could you not relate?
That little baby boy right there is so cute.
And here's the whole Wagner clan, LR. Left, right. Steve, David, Jeff,
and Martin. I'm the oldest of 10 kids, so.
Are you really?
Yeah, I am.
Do you keep in touch with all of your siblings?
Yeah, they're not exactly of the same political or religious beliefs as me, so it's I won't say it's as strange because it isn't when I see them. It's a loving family, and so I speak to them. They come out to my shows sometimes, but. We don't relate all the time. So.
Right, I know the feeling.
You know?
I have six brothers and sisters, and I feel the same way. We don't relate on a lot of things, too. A lot of my brothers and sisters have kids.
Right.
I don't have any kids, so it's kind of hard to relate with children when you don't have any yourself.
That's very true. You know, I love kids. I had a foundation for a while. I gave it up because I couldn't get enough people to work to make it happen.
Right.
Child Foundation. So, I love kids, but I don't love them very long. When they're around, pretty soon I wish they weren't there. Just kids who can bother me. My mind is always somehow singing a song or doing something with music.
Right.
And they irritate me sometimes, but I love kids, I gotta say.
Now that's the way kids are. Anybody's kids, you irritate them once in a while.
Yeah,
I think.
Absolutely.
No kids are perfect. Now, were your parents proud of what you became?
My dad still. He's 91 years old.
Is he really?
When are you gonna do something valuable?
Is that what he says?
When are you gonna get a real job? I mean, Dad, I'm 70 years old. Do you get it?
And he's still not getting it.
He still doesn't get it, no.
And your mom's with us?
No, she's gone. She's been dead for quite a long time.
91 years old. Wow. Where is he living now?
He lives in Mesa, Arizona.
Right, so you still keep in contact with him?
Well, he's about 40 minutes away from me, so I go to see him. In fact, I'm going to see him today.
Oh, wow.
But he's tough. He's a tough one.
For 50 years you've been happy doing what you've been doing, and you've been successful at it. You've met a lot of people. You've made a lot of friends. I mean, you've had a good life. Why can't people see that?
Well, my dad, he has to always be the dad, and I'm always the son. You know, maybe that's natural. I don't know, but at some point you have to let your kids go and be proud of what they do.
Right.
I guess he's just not proud. He thought I should do something else. And he's of that generation who sometimes feel they own the kids.
Do you think if
I'm not...
Right.
I'm not owned by anybody. I mean, so, you know, that's just the way I turned out.
Yeah, as you get along in reading the book, you start to realize how very singular you are. You do what you want to do when you want to do it. That's just who you are.
Well, yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm a little more subdued now. You know, I'm able to deal with people a little more closely. But I've been kind of a lone wolf kind of guy most of my life.
Right. Do you ever have days where you just think to yourself, well, I'd like to just retire and just sit and play my guitar for the rest of my life?
Retire? No. I don't want to retire. I want to be active. I want to do viable music no matter what. And
it makes you happy.
Escape. It does. And I want to continue to escape death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I had the heart attack and stroke same day, and I was dead on arrival at the hospital.
Were you really?
So, yes, I was, and I probably shouldn't even be here. But for the work of a doctor who was on call that night, a great heart doctor, Dr. Alami, and he basically saved my life.
Wow.
And so I'm still here. But
what's it feel like to be dead?
I felt nothing. I wrote a song about it. It's called No White Light. I didn't see any white light or a tunnel or anything. I was in a coma for 2 weeks. I woke up from a coma.
I can't imagine what that feels like, to wake up in a coma.
Total blackness. I mean, I don't remember anything of that 2 weeks at all. Nothing. So
I can't imagine what it's like to wake up 2 weeks later and not remember the last 2 weeks. It doesn't...
Yeah, I know I can't imagine it either, but that's the way it was during that period of time.
Here's a picture of you in 2010 with Bobby Flores and Susan Michelson, who I spoke to.
Huh? And yeah, Susan's my manager. She's my manager. And Bobby Flores is my friend in Texas, who's a great guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
And I use him and the other guys in the band in Texas to make records there.
Now, do you have your own studio?
I have just a home studio for me, for my writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a studio in Phoenix that I do a lot of work in. I own my own studio, but it's not like I did. In Saginaw, I own a legitimate public, you know, commercial studio for 10 years. And then 9/11 came along, and I said, business went totally south. And I had to finally get that place up because I could not afford it.
Now, you also have 3 chihuahuas.
I do, indeed.
What is it about chihuahuas you like so much that you have 3 of them?
They're wonderful dogs. They really are. These dogs are so loving and just special. They're very special. They're very funny. And they're not as yippy and yappy as some I've heard. You know, they're a little more subdued. Maybe it's because my wife treats them really well, and so do I. But they're beautiful little pups, and I enjoy them, and they enjoy me. They need their human counterpart. And I'm their daddy, and my wife, she's their mommy, and they have three of them. It's fun. It's like a menagerie.
I'm looking at Sandy here. Sandy looks like a nice woman. That was your wedding day in 2002.
Yeah, she's very nice. She was my high school sweetheart.
Yeah.
But we didn't see each other for 40 years, and then we met again and just got married.
Were all of your wives into music? Were they into what you did? Did they like music like you did?
No. Nobody likes music like I do. I don't think. I mean, of course, people do, but not my wives.
No.
You know, they intend to get a little bit jealous of me having to go on the road. You can't always take people with you. You know, you can't always afford it, so you go out and you go earn a living.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for them to understand that.
Right. You're pretty much devoted your life to it. I mean, it's what you are.
Yes, exactly.
And where would you be without music? If somebody told you you couldn't play music anymore, you'd go crazy.
I would, and then what else would I do?
Right.
I mean, I'm interested in things, but not like music and performing.
I mean,
I don't know what I would do. I guess I could take my guitar and become a guitar-playing grader at Walmart.
There you go. That's a good idea.
Because that's the best present always.
Exactly.
You know,
that would work out right. People would love that.
I mean, yeah, they would, actually. They probably would.
Is there anybody who doesn't like to be sung to? I mean, let's face it. It's a pleasant thing to listen to somebody playing music.
Yes, if they're good at it, it's very pleasant.
It's amazing.
You can sometimes find people who aren't so good who can irritate the hell out of you, generally, I write really good music, and so it would probably go over real big at Walmart.
Well, how would you...
give me any benefits or pay me, so, you know, so it would be just a waste of my years.
Yeah, exactly.
I want them to be productive.
What were you like on the road? Were you easy to get along with, or were you short-tempered?
Yeah. Oh, no, not short-tempered at all.
Not at all.
I'm very funny on the road. I'm very funny. I was always the leader of all the humor. We get in the limousines and start making up stuff with each other, the guys in the band, and just everybody laughing for hours. It was a great, you know, it's always been a great time, you know, with other musicians.
Have you ever been intimidated by somebody you met, a famous person you met?
You know, not really, like, you know, meeting, say, Rod Stewart or someone like that.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't intimidate me at all. Because I do what I do, and when they recognize that, there's nothing to be intimidated about.
Right.
I haven't met anybody yet. I wish I could have met the Beatles and Elvis. Maybe I would have been intimidated then. I don't know, but I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Is there anybody you wanted to meet and never got to meet? Anybody famous?
Well, those two examples would
yeah.
be definitely people in the music that I'd like to meet. But, I'd like to have met Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
There's many people in the world it would be fun to have met, but I'm just a small town boy from Michigan.
Right. Who has a lot of talent and is very creative.
Yeah, I've been blessed with that, you know. Blessed to be able to do it.
It's an art. I mean, to do it well like you've done it is an art. I mean, it's something to be very proud of.
At a certain point, you know, writing songs, making music is very creative and it's a great craft.
So everybody listens to music. Yeah, everybody listens to music. So it's something that everybody can relate to.
The art part of it is that occasionally you write something that is art. You know, at least I have this, a couple of songs that are artistic, as opposed to just being a crafted song.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get the songs that are really artistic and they really represent a deep part of you. It's a special thing.
I like in the front of your book how you introduce yourself. That's so different. I mean, you don't see that much in biographies. Oh, in a biography. That never happens.
I woke up screaming. What the fuck? I mean, that is a novel introduction, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
That's very, very clever. I like the way you did that. There's 8 parts to this book too, which is another amazing thing. 8 parts to an autobiography. And you couldn't find another autobiography with 8 parts in it.
I don't think so. I think you're right.
And you get 2 free CDs with the book too.
My book is different. I've read some of the other, rock musician books out there, and mine is different than all of them. And, not to blow my own horn, but I think mine's the best book of all. It's the most humorous, and it's the most fun to read, I think.
How many books do you get 2 free CDs with, too,
You don't. I did that on purpose. I just wanted to have something where it would be like a special gift. You get more, you get music, too.
Now, are these songs all ones you've written, the Full Meltdown CD?
Yeah, except for Staggered Lee, which is, it's an old blues, it's an old classic song.
Oh, Staggered Lee, there it is, yeah.
But the rest of them are my songs, yeah.
And that's actually you right there.
That's me.
There you are. How old were you at the time?
I would have been, I'm trying to think, from the 1977.
That's 23, it's 35 years ago then.
35 years ago,
You would have been 36 then.
That goes by.
It does. It's just before you know it, a year has gone by. It's amazing how when you look back and then 3 years have passed and you think, it can't be 3 years. It just seems so...
Yeah, I know time is so relative, but when you get to be 70, you can feel it passing much faster. It's scary, but it's life. You can live it one day at a time, or you can awfulize the future and be, constantly thinking about you're going to die someday. But, you're going to die someday, so you got to just accept that and then try to live in the moment if you can.
Right, exactly.
That's right. I try to do it.
I heard you played at Bookends unexpectedly. They weren't expecting you to play, and you started playing. Is that true?
That's true, yeah.
What did you play?
When I do my book signing event, rather than the typical book reading where you sit there and you read a chapter from your book to people and hope that will interest them enough to buy the book, I combine it with music so that I can play songs and then talk about how the songs originated and talk about stories from the book, so I can make it much more descriptive, more involved, like an actual event. And that's my theory on the whole thing, is that everything you do has to be an event.
Mm-hmm.
In order for people to take notice, especially now. I mean, if you don't do something like that, nobody's going to pay any attention.
So. Right.
So we try to create little mini concerts, mini events.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Now, you have a thing...
That's really cool.
The other thing on Billy Joel and World War III. Did you ever meet Billy Joel?
I just saw Billy Joel last year. He came into town with Elton John. He invited me to come down.
Did he really?
I hadn't seen him in years. But I came down to to see him and meet with him and Dennis Arfa, who was his agent, who was my manager during those years.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole band, Elton John's band and Billy Joel's band, they all came and paid homage to me. It was like unbelievable, because I've been around and they all know me, they know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really a beautiful thing. I left feeling really energized toward everything because of the attention they paid. I was very happy.
That's great.
Same thing happened with Steve Lukather. I went to see Toto.
Mm-hmm.
I went backstage to see him because we had done some work together on one of the Alice Cooper albums.
Right.
And the first thing he did, he had just come off stage playing one of the most amazing guitar solos I'd ever heard. And I was just like thrilled to see him. It had been quite a few years. And the first thing he did was he bowed to me. He said, "The master, the master." And I said, "Steve, what are you doing, man? You just played the greatest guitar solo I've ever heard, and you're bowing to me." It was beautiful. You know, those kind of things in my life, when those happen to me, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. Who would you like to write a song for today? If somebody said to you, who would you want to write a song for more than anybody else? Is there somebody that comes to mind right away?
Not really.
I mean, you've heard a lot. You hear a lot of the music of today, I'm sure. There must be somebody.
Yeah, I love, like, Bruno Mars.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's brilliant.
Right.
I love Maroon 5.
When
they write a song, they write their own music. I mean, you need to respect them for that.
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah.
I'd love to have a song with one of those guys. I think it'd be great.
Right. If they called you up tomorrow and they said, write a song for us, do you think you could do it?
Sure. Would it be a hit? Who the hell knows? I don't know. But I could definitely come up with something for them.
Well, you know what their style of music is, too, so you know what they go for, I guess.
See, that's the whole point. You have to, if you're going to write songs for people, if you're going to play guitar for other people's records, you have to learn to get inside not only the song you're going to play, but you have to get into and understand the style of who the artist is, because then you can add your own self to it and try to elevate the whole thing. You know, try to make it even better than they would have done behind their own. And I try to do that with everything that I work on.
Mm-hmm. Now, does Alice Cooper still play the guitar? Is he still?
He doesn't play guitar at all.
Oh, he's never played guitar. Okay.
No, he's a lyricist and a performer.
Okay.
And one of the greatest, you know, of all time.
Mm-hmm. Dummy me, I didn't even know he didn't play the guitar.
No, you learn something every day, right?
You do.
You definitely.
I never followed Alice Cooper. I mean, I knew the name, of course. Everybody knows the name, but you know, but I never. That was not my kind.
If you got into the Alice Cooper album, there's some great music in there. There's some really, people have never heard this stuff, but if you ever actually got into it, there's just some great music in there.
Right.
And I like to think I was part of it, you know. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's got to be a great feeling. I'm looking. I'm still.
A couple of Alice Cooper records that are really incredible. One is Welcome to My Nightmare, and the other one is From the Inside. And then one of the last records they did was a record called Dada, which is just really intriguing, artful, artsy music, which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be releasing a record here pretty soon. It's tapes that I discovered I'd forgotten all about, with me playing jazz and blues in my living room with a little drum machine and my guitar. And, when I rediscovered it and listened to it, I said, man, this is a complete different side of me, completely. Nobody knows me for this kind of playing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to put it out just as kind of a fun thing, let people discover it. If they're going to call me the maestro, they need to have a real reason to do it. And this playing is part of why they might call me the maestro. So it's a justification and I don't need to be justified because I do have a good body of work over 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just something additional to add to the mystique. So I'm doing that. I'm going to Denmark to produce a band based on the concept that I have and songs that I had written.
Right.
And it took me a couple of years to find a group that could actually perform it, and they finally did.
I like how in this book you say that if you had to do it all over again, you'd probably do it all the same way. very honest and very upfront.
That's very true. I don't know if I'd write everything about it again, but it's worked out really well. You know, I was a little bit afraid after I'd written it. Oh, geez, maybe I've said too much. you know, maybe people aren't really going to like me after they read it. But it has worked just the opposite.
Yeah.
Where people appreciate the honesty.
Absolutely.
Plus, they like the adventures and they like the stories. So it's completely different than their lives. And the honesty in it is what they always remark on. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel really, really good that I did it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, honesty is a big part of when people, when you're honest with somebody, it's hard to resent somebody for being honest, you know, even if it's, unless you're insulting somebody, but you're not insulting anybody in this book, that's not the point.
No, I don't think I insulted anybody. The only person that got insulted was my first wife, because I put her name in, and she said she didn't want her name in there. But what are they going to say, my first wife, over and over? No, I had to put her name in.
Here's some old tickets. One from 1975 for the West Terrace for an Alice Cooper show for $2.
Uh-huh.
Amazing.
Yeah,
I mean,
they were different then. They were different then.
A lot different.
The dollar was worth a lot more. So.
I remember when I paid $125 for an Eagles ticket. That, I mean, back then it seemed like a lot of money, and it seems like a lot of money today.
But they charge more than that now. So.
Yeah. Here's a general admission one for the Sam Houston Coliseum for the Alice Cooper show for $7. Amazing.
Yeah, those were the days, but I don't know how any of us survived our $2 tickets, but we did.
And you have all these ticket stubs saved?
I don't have them in my possession. My webmaster has all the stuff collected.
Right.
Put into an area where it's safe. You know, later, if I ever want to sell it all, but you know, why would I? Actually, I'm not really into all that. They're memories for me, and they're part of my past. But I want my son to inherit all that stuff.
And you still don't hear from your daughter.
This last year, I was just in New York a week and a half ago. She called me.
Really?
She called me. She wanted to see me. She came to see me. And I spent like an hour and a half with her. And then the next day I was doing a book signing at Barnes & Noble in New York City.
Right.
And she came up for that too. She came up for the book signing and then she went to dinner with me after.
Wow.
And I just Skyped with her yesterday morning.
So you are communicating with her. Yeah.
She's reached out now, finally, reached out and gotten a hold of me. And she was sent me an email and sent me Skype. So we did that. We got to talk to each other yesterday again. So it's really good. I'm very happy.
Now, what's her name?
Jasmine.
Wonderful. That's great. I'm glad. Because you write in the book that you hadn't heard from her in a while. It made me sad to read that.
Well, it was 20 years since I last talked to her. Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, she has avoided me for so many years, and then she called, reached out to me. She came to see me two days in a row, and we had just a great time talking to each other and seeing each other. So, very positive, very positive. I've been trying to get her to contact me for years.
Right.
I never gave up getting a hold of her, sending her emails, you know, trying to call her. I never gave up, and it finally paid off.
That's wonderful.
And she's doing great. She's a professor at Western Connecticut State College. She's very brilliant, and it was just really nice.
It's always nice when your kids are successful and happy. I'm sure she's happy. So.
Yeah. She seems to be very happy.
Right. And you you've had such a great life, and you're still going strong. You're still doing book tours. You're still going to go out on the road. It's like it's never, it hasn't changed in 50 years.
No, it's the same thing, but it's, you know, of course it's always different every time you go out. But I love it, and I'm been able to have a life where I can work at what I love to do.
Right.
And most people can't say that. I don't think. I don't want to judge everyone, but you know, I've been one of those people who's been able to do what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore being happy at the same time is earning a living.
Right. So how many cities are you going to on your book tour? Or are you done with your book tour now?
Well, I'm done with that part of the book tour. I'm going to tour with this book for the next year.
Oh, are you really?
Because, yeah, there's so many places to possibly go.
Oh, yeah.
And meet people and sell the book. And
play guitar.
And play guitar and sing. I can go to places where they don't ever get a chance to see me. And so this way it does get a little mini concert and buy the book and read the book, and they get kind of the experience that a lot of people want to have, but then I haven't been touring those because that's still not everything. Now I'm out there again, so
right.
I think it's working out very well.
Well, that... I wish you all the best with the book. The book again is called Not Only Women Bleed, and it's out for Desert Dreams, and it's in all your bookstores, and it's a heavy book too. I like that. It's really heavy. You pick it up and it's substantial, you know. So it's nice.
It's really put together really beautifully. That's my company and people in the company did this, but I insisted that it has to be class, and it has to be, you know, like a really good product.
Right, exactly.
Like a paperback, or
right.
It had to be an actual book. I insisted on that. We started out with an e-book just to introduce the thing, but eventually we went to hardcover, and that was doing very well. I'm in my third printing right now.
Are you really? Nice.
Yeah, I am, so.
Very cool.
I hope you go to 4 and 5, and then maybe I'll put a soft cover on it after that.
There you go.
So, you know, sell it for less money. I don't know, but it's going well. And I'm very happy.
Very good.
And I'm very happy you called me, and I really enjoyed this interview. So.
Well, thank you so much. This has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you. And we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.